Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We open with details today from the FBI on how they tracked down a cyber hack on Sony and threats against theaters to the North Korean government. On our Capitol Report, learn why language added to the spending bill could lead the federal government to back off on enforcement in states that have legalized medical marijuana. Hear why a fraternity house at San Diego State has been ordered shut down for at least the next year and a half. And on Green Scene, learn the fate of wind production tax credits in Congress. Plus, we'll have details on State Senator Ben Wesso's plea to reckless driving charges involving alcohol. Today, we'll be replaying our important interview with Cal Biotech President Nuri Barca, who talks about a new nonprofit to create an incubator for new businesses in East County. Hear about holiday hazards to avoid and keep your household safe. Learn about volunteer opportunities for senior citizens with the El Cajon Police Department. Then on Destination East County, hear about some midwinter events from a winter solstice hike to our own East County Magazine Feasting and Merrymaking holiday party. We'll also tell you about a toy drive that's raised thousands of toys for local children. Plus, we'll replay Nadine Abbott's recollections of Christmas in Acapulco. In addition, we'll be replaying our bookshelf interview with children's book author Annette Tour, who is also a local teacher and musician. And on Crime Beat, hear how alert viewers of our news partner 10 News helped solve the case of the brazen bulldozer theft in Lakeside. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the story we reported earlier regarding terrorist threats made against theater chains and Sony Pictures Entertainment. Sony has now canceled its Christmas Day debut of the comedy film The Interview at theaters nationwide following cyber attacks that released personal data of Sony employees and threats from hackers of 9/11-style attacks on theaters. The film depicted journalists recruited by the CIA to assassinate North Korea's President Kim Jong-un. Now the FBI has issued a statement on its investigation which has confirmed that North Korea is behind the threats. According to the FBI, a group calling itself Guardians of Peace claimed credit for the cyber attacks and the threats against Sony, its employees, and theaters distributing the movies. FBI Special Agent Daryl Foxworth says of the initial hacking, Sony reported this incident within hours, which is what the FBI hopes all companies will do when facing a cyber attack. Sony's quick reporting facilitated the investigators' ability to do their jobs and ultimately to identify the source of these attacks, he says. As a result of our investigation and in close collaboration with other U.S. government departments and agencies, the FBI now has enough information to conclude that the North Korean government is responsible for these attacks, concludes. Now, as the mother of a theater employee myself, I, like many Americans, breathe a sigh of relief that Sony is taking steps to protect workers and moviegoers, but at the same time, I feel outraged that a foreign government has effectively blackmailed a U.S. business into suppressing free speech and taking a major economic hit. I know that Christmas Day is one of the busiest days of the year for movie theaters, and moreover, Sony is now facing lawsuits from employees and former employees over the data breach by North Korea. The FBI concluded that North Korea is behind the malicious hacks, in part due to technical analysis of the data deletion malware that is similar to malware previously linked to North Korea. The FBI also found Internet Protocol, or IP, addresses associated with known North Korean infrastructure communicated with IP addresses hard-coded into the data deletion malware used in the Sony attack. According to the FBI, the tools used to hack Sony are similar to those in a cyber attack last year against South Korean banks and media outlets, which was also carried out by the North Korean government. Agent Foxworth, voiced deep concern about the destructive nature of this attack on a private sector business and its employees. He adds that North Korea's attack on Sony reaffirms that cyber threats pose one of the gravest national security dangers to the United States. And he adds, though the FBI has seen a wide variety and increasing number of cyber intrusions, the destructive nature of this attack, coupled with its coercive nature, sets it apart. North Korea's actions were intended to inflict significant harm on a U.S. business and suppress the right of American citizens to express themselves. Such acts of intimidation fall outside the bounds of acceptable state behavior. The FBI concludes that it stands ready to assist any U.S. company that is the victim of a destructive cyber attack or breach of confidential business information, and the agency concludes, it is also working closely with other departments and agencies domestically and overseas in order to identify, pursue, and impose consequences on individuals, groups, or nation states who use cyber means to threaten the United States or American interests. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. Two California congressmen slipped language into the $1.1 trillion spending bill signed into law by the president, calling on the federal government to stop spending money enforcing marijuana laws in states where medical marijuana has been legalized. But the language is vague and lacks teeth, so it's not clear yet whether marijuana patients, clinics, and growers can breathe a sigh of relief. The actual text of the amendment states that it prohibits the use of funds to prevent certain states from implementing their own state laws that authorize the use, distribution, possession, or cultivation of medical marijuana. The measure then lists 32 states that have already legalized medical marijuana and makes clear that the Department of Justice may not use money from the spending bill to block those states from regulating marijuana through state laws. The language was added by California Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, a Republican, and Sam Farr, a Democrat. Farr says his intent is to send a clear message that if you are a legal resident doing business under state law, the feds just can't come in and bust you and bust the doctors and bust the patients. But critics contend the law is too vague to offer real protections. An opinion piece in Forbes by Jacob Solom, senior editor at Reason, points out that such actions could effectively shut down access. If the Drug Enforcement Agency raids a clinic or arrests a patient for growing marijuana in a state that allows medical use and the U.S. attorney prosecutes that person, it does not prevent the state from implementing its law, decriminalizing cultivation of cannabis for medical use. In California, where medical marijuana use is legal, but the status of dispensaries remains murky, federal officials may still seek to justify raids. Farr, in a telebriefing Friday, admitted that the language was a statement of congressional intent that DEA should back off, and that reconciliation between states and federal policies are still needed, but he added, I think intent was very clear from the excellent floor speeches. Some media outlets have jumped on the language to make overly broad assumptions. Associated Press wrote, under provision in the spending bill passed by Congress over the weekend, states where medical marijuana is legal would no longer need to worry about federal drug agents raiding retail operations. Agents would be prohibited from doing so. The Los Angeles Times reported, tucked deep inside the 1,603-page federal spending measure is a provision that effectively ends the federal government's prohibition on medical marijuana and signals a major shift in drug policy. But in fact, the bill itself leaves wiggle room, and federal agencies have failed to heed presidential policies in the past. Even after Obama took office and his White House affirmed that federal resources should not be used to circumvent state laws, and Attorney General Holder pledged to have the Justice Department focus only on large traffickers, enforcement actions continued. Deputy Attorney General David Ogden also stated in an October 2009 memo that federal resources should not focus on individuals whose actions are in clear and unambiguous compliance with existing state laws providing for the medical use of marijuana, while patients with serious illnesses and their caregivers should be left alone, Ogden said federal prosecutions could occur for sales to minors or for marketing activities inconsistent with state laws, such as unlicensed dispensaries. Yet DEA raids continue and even accelerated, and while the feds have made no effort to challenge state laws, even in Colorado and Washington, where recreational marijuana was legalized by voters, it has continued to arrest and prosecute growers and distributors, including those in medical marijuana states. Moreover, the Obama administration's back off on cannabis patients might not be honored by a future president after the next election unless Congress clarifies its language. The current bill just signed into law only prohibits federal funds from being spent on actions to prevent states from implementing their own medical marijuana laws, which might be interpreted to mean court actions seeking to overturn laws that legalized medical marijuana in more than half the states. It says nothing specifically about prohibiting arrests of individuals who are complying with state law while violating the federal ban on all marijuana use, including medical marijuana use, which remains on the books. For those who believe it's high time that the federal government stops spending taxpayer dollars arresting and prosecuting medical marijuana patients, their doctors, and growers in compliance with state law, this measure likely does not go far enough to assure safety from federal enforcement. If the intent of Congress is to provide protection to individuals who use or provide medical marijuana in states that have legalized the practice, then Congress may wish to enact clarifying legislation that explicitly prohibits federal enforcement against patients, doctors, and growers, following the law in states that have voted to legalize medical cannabis.
The Delta Sigma Phi fraternity at San Diego State University has been shut down for disciplinary action and will remain closed until at least fall of 2016. San Diego State University's Division of Student Affairs announced the disciplinary action due to a consistent pattern of policy violations, including harassment of women participating in a Take Back the Night march on November 21st, as well as serious hazing and alcohol misconduct issues. As a result of this consistent violation of university policies, the Delta Sigma Phi National Office, in consultation with SDSU, has closed the Gamma Alpha chapter. Additionally, individuals involved in the harassment policy violation will also be subject to a Title IX policy investigation and a Student Code of Conduct policy violation investigation. Delta Sigma Phi's national office issued a statement which reads in part, "It recently became clear that certain members of Gamma Alpha chapter have not maintained the integrity that our members deserve and that our history demands." The statement adds, "The fraternity cannot and will not tolerate blatant disregard toward our policies and standards for members and chapters." Eric Rivera, San Diego State's Vice President of Student Affairs, says there is no place in our campus community for the type of ongoing behaviors displayed by those involved with this fraternity chapter. He expressed appreciation to the National Office of Delta Sigma Phi for taking action, adding that he does hope to see the chapter return when the time is right to be productive members of the campus community once again. The frat house will stay closed until several milestones are met. These include attaining charter status, maintaining an alcohol and drug-free environment, employing a full-time house manager to address behavioral issues, and creating an advising panel. San Diego State University has implemented numerous training programs, events, and resources to address serious concerns, including 14 sexual assaults reported on campus this year. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with news from Congress on East County Magazine. A bill to extend the wind production tax credit and investment tax credit, along with other tax incentives for wind energy developers, has passed both houses of Congress and is now on President Barack Obama's desk. H.R. 5771 passed the House by a vote of 378-46 and passed the Senate by 78-16 vote margin. The wind industry has sought a 2-year extension, but this measure extends the tax credits only through 2015. The Obama administration has touted wind energy as a key component of his plans for addressing climate change and reducing fossil fuel use. Aaron Severin, Director of Legislative Affairs for the American Wind Energy Association, says, unfortunately, this last-minute extension does not provide enough lead time to incentivize many new projects. The news is also disappointing to opponents of the tax incentives, who have argued that many wind energy projects are boondoggles, such as in Ocotillo, where the project has thus far failed to produce the energy promised, but caused significant environmental damage and disruption for residents.
State Senator Ben Wesso has accepted a plea deal from prosecutors in Sacramento County. Wesso, a Democratic legislator from San Diego, was originally charged with drunk driving, but pled guilty to a lesser charge of reckless driving involving alcohol. He received leniency due to his blood alcohol level of 0.08, which was just over the legal limit. Wesso was arrested in August after driving the wrong way on a one-way street in Sacramento following a party with Latino caucus members at the state capitol. He received 3 years probation and must pay an $1,100 fine, as well as complete a 6-week reckless driving program, according to the Sacramento Bee. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Nuri Barca. Nuri is the founder of Cal Biotech, a very successful biotech business here in East County. He's a leader in the Chaldean American Iraqi community in East County, and he's here today to talk about some efforts that he's involved with to bring an incubator business concept to East County. Nuri, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you are starting up a nonprofit, I understand. What's it called?
Yes, we started the, we call it San Diego East County Business Incubator. We already filed for a 501c3, and we're in the process of getting our exemption status.
Very good. San Diego East County Business Incubator. For those who are not familiar, can you explain what an incubator business concept is all about?
The incubator basically is a program designed to support startup companies. Mm-hmm. So the simplest way, if you have an idea, you want to start a business, and most of the time you go through an hassle and to find, you know, a way to get your business to the ground. So we will help you through this process. We will incubate you, mm-hmm. put you in the incubator for up to 3 years. And during this time, we will give you the full support, and we'll give you the space, we'll give you the tools that you need. We'll bring you the expertise to help you with your business idea. Also, we'll give you in financial support by bringing investors who might like your idea and they want to invest in your idea, and they will be getting a share of your business when you graduate and your business is successful.
Well, that sounds very exciting. Now, once someone graduates and they're out there in the world with their business, what happens next?
Basically, we'll keep supporting them after they graduate. One of the conditions we ask, we will be asking, is that when you graduate, your business must stay in the East County, because our idea from this incubator program is to help the East County business development and community development in our community.
Very exciting. I've always wondered why it is that the biotech businesses all seem to go to Poway or Scripps Ranch or Sorrento Valley, places other than East County. Do you think this is going to help turn that around?
Hopefully, with the support, and we have a successful project already with Cal Biotech that, you know, we started Cal Biotech 17 years ago. So this could be a good asset for us to start there. And we have another biotech company in the East County, which is the Scantibodies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So between the two companies, we have some kind of a base now. We want to expand on that. And besides, you know, the biotech field, we could actually, we are open to accept applicants for other field in engineering or any other kind of business tools idea or software that we could see a value. So based on the applicant we will be receiving, we will design the focus over time. Actually, it's going to be some time till we figure out what are the best presentation, what are the best focus we have to take for our business incubator.
This also seeks to address the very high unemployment problem in East County, particularly among the Iraqi immigrant community, where we've had so many people who were refugees from the long wars in Iraq and the Middle East coming here. Can you tell us how high that unemployment rate is and what types of people might be able to, what kind of talent that pool of potential business owners has?
Yeah, as you know, we have close to 50% unemployment in our newcomers, actually. And many of these newcomers, they are established business people, they are engineers, doctors, and professionals from Iraq. And if you put them in the right environment, if you give them the right tools, especially for them, they don't know the culture of this of our country, and it's going to help them a lot if we give them the help and support to start new business in the East County. So they will be the pioneers playing a role in helping our economy at the end of the day. So we are planning, actually, through the East County Development Council, we are planning to do a survey to determine the expertise and what the skills that these people might have so we could use them, through this project.
Very good. Who else is supportive of the project locally?
Everybody, actually, is in support of it. We started with the city of El Cajon. I did give a presentation to the city council, over almost a year ago, and they're 100% supporting, and even they will help us financially to start. We need seed money, to start the project.
Sure.
So the city has approved that, and we have a member of the city council. My friend Tony Ambrose is in the board with us. The Chamber of Commerce, the East County, also is very supportive. And we have Joe McKay in the board with us. And the district, Cajon Valley District, also is in support of this project. Beside the East County Development Council, we have James Slay. He might be our executive director of the project. So we have the right people, and we are putting our effort together. And actually, we have a meeting December 22nd. We have a meeting to kind of make our plan to start the project. Hopefully, we can planning to start early 2015.
Well, that sounds very, very exciting. Now, I understand that the Cajon Valley School District provided or is going to provide a place for the incubator business.
That's what we have offered by the district. They offer us a space next to their building, and it is an unfinished space. We have to do some work on it. We need some money to develop it. But at least we have a space that is offered to us by the Cajon Valley District for the time being to start with. It's a small size, but hopefully over time we can expand and go from there.
Very good. Where can people learn more about the nonprofit?
We are in the process to set up our website. It should be ready in a month. But if somebody want to talk to us, they can either talk to me directly, or even they can come through the East County Magazine. We will work together with you to answer their questions.
Yes, certainly. You can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll have an article up soon on eastcountymagazine.org where people can find out more information. And if they want to reach you directly, Nuri, is there a contact number you want to give
them? I can give them my email, which is nbarca@gmail.com.
Very good. For those of you who tuned in late, listeners, we've been speaking with Nuri Barca, who is the owner of Cal Biotech, and he is working to launch the San Diego East County Business Incubator along with some other community leaders, and you'll be hearing a lot more about that in the near future. Nuri, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you for your time.
The San Diego County Fire Authority wants residents to be aware of holiday hazards that can increase your risk of a fire at your home and what you can do to stay safe. Christmas trees are beautiful, but they can also pose fire dangers. Most Christmas tree fires occur after a cut tree has dried out at the end of the holiday season. Many start overnight when tree lights have been left on. Be sure to water your tree and check levels every day. And even then, turn off lights when you're not around. After Christmas, put your tree out promptly for recycling or disposal. Kelly Gaffrey from the County Fire Authority says, leaving it up much past Christmas or New Year's, you could be asking for problems. It's amazing how quickly a tree can burn up and everything around it, too. The speed is just mind-boggling, he says. A video on the county website shows a holiday tree fully engulfed in flames in just 30 seconds. Never place any tree near a heat source such as a fireplace, furnace, or space heater. Unplug lights when leaving the house or going to sleep. Choose lights that don't heat up and don't put them near heat sources, curtains, or other flammable materials. Another holiday hazard is overloaded electrical circuits. Safety should take the priority over dazzling displays when it comes to stringing up lights or other electrical decorations. Electrical safety is especially important in older homes which weren't wired to today's electrical load limits. Back in the 1950s and 1960s, there weren't microwaves and computers and other big electricity-drawing appliances. Make sure you buy holiday lights that have been tested for safety by an independent laboratory. Check for a label. Follow directions for safety. Don't hang indoor lights outdoors or vice versa. And don't plug too many items into one electrical socket. Don't string together more than 3 strands of lights, Gaffrey says. And don't connect LED lights and non-LED light strands, he added. Besides untangling your light sets, inspect them to make sure they are all in good condition. This means checking for exposed wires or shattered bulbs and sockets since they pose a fire hazard. In most cases, damaged light sets should be replaced unless it is just a bulb that needs changing. Sometimes pets can chew on wires, so you may need to inspect often. If you need to buy new lights, LEDs tend to be cooler and significantly reduce the risk of fire. LED lights are also shatterproof and shock-resistant. How big a danger are these? According to the National Fire Protection Association, from 2007 to 2011, firefighters across the nation responded to 230 house fires that began with a Christmas tree. Those fires resulted in 6 deaths, 22 injuries, and $18.3 million worth of property damage. Holiday lights and other decorative lighting were factors in 150 home fires in this same period. Candles are a big part of the season for many people, but they can be dangerous if left unattended while lit. They need to be placed in a sturdy surface out of reach for children and pets, and away from flammable materials including drapes. Use stable candle holders and use the appropriate size candle for the holder. Fireplaces can also pose safety risks. It's important to have your fireplace professionally maintained by a certified chimney sweep once a year if you use it often. Never use excessive paper or flammable liquid to start a fire. Use a metal or glass screen to keep embers in the fireplace opening. Never leave a fire unattended or burning overnight. A spark guard on top of your chimney is another safety protection. Space heaters offer warmth and can save on heating bills, but can be deadly. If you're using a space heater, make sure it's a good quality model that has been professionally tested for safety. Set up the heater with nothing around it, such as drapes or furniture, which can catch fire either from either direction, touching it, or from radiant heat. Never leave a space heater on overnight. Heat up your room before you go to bed, then shut it down. A space heater draws a lot of electricity and should be plugged into its own outlet, and extension cords are not recommended. Carbon monoxide poisoning is an additional winter risk. Carbon monoxide is colorless and odorless, so it can be a silent killer, overwhelming people who are sleeping or unaware of the problem. In winter, with windows and doors closed, any leak is trapped inside. Be sure to have your heater checked each year for safety. Inspections are free from SDG&E. Have a carbon monoxide detector on every level of your home. If you have symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning, such as headache, dizziness, fatigue, nausea, confusion, and shortness of breath, get out of the house immediately and call 911. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the City of El Cajon. The El Cajon Police Department is seeking participants for its Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol Program, or RSVP. The program offers opportunities for senior citizens to serve with the police and help enhance community safety and security through crime prevention and education. Participants assist law enforcement officers in many ways. Some of those include enforcing handicap parking regulations, conducting vacation home security checks, performing traffic control, patrolling business districts, parking lots, and school zones, calling or visiting homebound seniors through the You Are Not Alone program, making personal contact with business owners, patrons, residents, and visitors, and representing the police department at special events. El Cajon Police Chief Jim Redmond says the men and women of the RSVP program have proven to be an invaluable resource for us here in the department and in the community they serve. Participation includes a one-year commitment with at least 1 6-hour shift a week, attendance at monthly training meetings, and participation in a 2-week academy. To qualify, you have to meet the following selection requirements. You must be 50 years of age or older, a U.S. citizen, successfully complete a background investigation, including a computer check of driving and criminal history, possess medical and automobile insurance, physical ability to perform all patrol-related duties, and a valid California driver's license. For more information, you can contact Volunteer Coordinator Randy Baldwin at 619-579-3354.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County has some wonderful events, from winter solstice walks to performances of holiday classics, including the Nutcracker Ballet and Handel's Messiah.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, from the Aztecs playing in the Poinsettia Bowl to the Trout Reopener at Santee Lakes.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
3 winter solstice hikes to watch the sunrise atop Cowles Mountain will be held on December 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Guides from Canyoneers and Mission Trails will lead you to a solstice observatory area. The hike begins before dawn, so bring a flashlight. Meet at the Cowles Mountain trailhead at the corner of Gulf Crest and Navajo for this 2-hour round-trip hike. The solstice site is about a mile up the trail, and its age is unknown, though the Kumeyaay Indians use similar sites across Southern California. A highlight of the solstice hike is seeing the rising sun split by a peak on the eastern horizon. But don't stare directly at the sun, since the sun can cause eye damage. You can observe the sunrise safely for a very few seconds through narrow slits, such as between your fingers, held together to enjoy this midwinter spectacle.
Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo invites you to ride the rails aboard its special North Pole Limited train, along with Santa and his elves. Tickets are still available for December 19th and 20th. The fun begins with good cheer at the Campo Depot. Aboard the train, Santa's elves will serve cookies and hot chocolate, visiting with passengers as the North Pole Limited rockets toward the North Pole. An onboard reading of A Christmas Story leads up to the arrival at Santa's workshop, where Santa will board the train for a return trip, visiting with children aboard the train. Advance reservations are generally needed for this popular event. To reserve seats, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
Christian Community Theater's annual production, Traditions of Christmas, will be held at the Don Powell Theater at San Diego State University from December 19th through the 23rd, as Christian Youth Theater celebrates 21 years of Christmas memories. This year's production will feature scenes such as Christmas San Diego Style, A Salute to the Military, White Christmas, exciting swing dances, tap numbers from a Rockette style, Kick Line, and more. For information and tickets, visit cctsandiego.org.
San Diego County Parks invites you to an evening of holiday-themed stargazing and hot cider at Oak Oasis Preserve on Wildcat Canyon Road in Lakeside on Saturday, December 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. The San Diego Astronomy Association will be on hand with high-powered telescopes for up-close viewing of the stars and planets. The evening also features a campfire, sweet treats, and live music. Bundle up and bring a blanket for this fun event, which is free for the whole family.
Southern California Ballet will present The Nutcracker at Poway Performing Arts Center on December 20th and 21st in performances featuring internationally renowned dancer Martha Leibolt as the Sugar Plum Fairy. For tickets and details for this holiday favorite ballet, visit powaycenter.com.
Shabbat of East County invites you to a Hanukkah celebration at Grossmont Center in La Mesa on December 21st at 4 p.m. The event will feature lighting of a giant balloon menorah, music, hot latkes to savor, Hanukkah crafts, and more. For details, visit JewishEastCounty.com.
The Julian Community Choir will perform Handel's Messiah, a beloved holiday classic, on December 21st at 7 p.m. The concert will take place in Julian's historic town hall.
The La Mesa Kickboxing Academy invites the public to its Winter Extravaganza, described as a bohemian extravaganza like no other. The owners have assembled an array of vendors and small business owners for those seeking holiday shopping and fun gifts on Sunday, December 21st from 12 to 6 p.m. at 8322 Parkway Drive, La Mesa. The event also includes live music, art, speakers, and more. There is a small admission fee that's waived if you bring a toy to donate to Toys for Tot.
East County Magazine's own annual holiday party will be held on December 21st from 3 until 6 p.m. at the private home on Mount Helix. Festivities include feasting and merrymaking, wine tasting, foods from local restaurants, music, prizes, and surprises. This event is open only to subscribers of East County Magazine and our staff. You can sign up for your free subscription and your holiday party invitation at eastcountymagazine.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Football fans, heads up. The San Diego State Aztecs football team will be making its fifth consecutive Poinsettia Bowl appearance on Tuesday, December 23rd. This year, the Aztecs will be playing the Navy at Qualcomm Stadium with kickoff time at 6:40 p.m. For tickets, visit GoAztecs.com.
The San Diego Jazz Trio will be performing at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room at 8364 La Mesa Boulevard in La Mesa on Saturday, December 27th from 7 until 10 p.m. The trio's repertoire covers original songs as well as Latin tunes and familiar favorites in a bright and breezy style.
The Hukumba hikers and walkers will be hitting the trail on December 27th, hiking through desert terrain to Indian Hill, west of Ocotillo. Rock caves and Native American pictographs can be seen on Indian Hill. The hike will continue to an old railway camp and gunpowder shack, then onward to a hilltop view with a spectacular view of Carrizo Gorge. This hike is rated hard and is approximately 10 miles round trip. Dogs are not allowed. Hikers will meet at 8 a.m. at the Imperial Valley Desert Museum in Ocotillo for carpools. After the hike, the Hukumba Hot Springs Spa is offered free day use to hikers to soak away those aches and pains. So bring a swimsuit and a towel.
If you're looking for a wild time for kids on New Year's Eve day, you can bring your youngsters to meet local wildlife provided by Project Wildlife and learn about our animal neighbors at the Santee Library on December 31st at 1 p.m. It's all part of the library's Winter Boredom Break program. The Santee Library is located at 9225 Carlton Hills Boulevard in Santee.
The largest outdoor ice skating rink in Southern California is located at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine, and during the holidays, it's open from noon to 10 p.m. from December 20th through January 4th. Whether you're an experienced skater looking for space for spins, twirls, and jumps, or a novice in need of rental skates, you'll find ice available through January 4th at the Viejas Ice Rink, which is larger than the skating rink at Rockefeller Center.
If you love to fish, you may want to mark your calendars for the trout reopener at Santee Lakes on January 10th and 11th, when the lakes will be stocked with 2,000 pounds of rainbow trout. Prizes will be awarded for the 5 biggest fish caught. There will also be a breakfast sponsored by the Lions Club and prizes including fishing poles, tackle boxes, bicycles, camping gear, and fishing passes. For those lucky fishing folks who catch a 5-pound trout or larger, you will also be entered in the grand prize drawing for a flat-screen TV. For details, visit SanteeLakes.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The Neighborhood Market Association held its 6th annual NMA Toy Drive for Disadvantaged Youth around San Diego on Sunday at the Crystal Ballroom in El Cajon, raising over 7,000 toys that were given out to thousands of children throughout the community. CEO and President Mark Arabo, a San Diego businessman, community activist, and national spokesman for the Iraqi Chaldean Christian community, has led the toy drive for the last 6 years. He says, "The NMA Toy Drive is our most special event held throughout the year," adding that the preparation took months, working with community leaders and the public. "Each year, the toy drive has become stronger, raising more toys for thousands of local children because," Arabo says, "there should never be a Christmas without toys, and there should never be a family who, for whatever situation, is unable to provide their children with gifts for the holidays. I am humbled to see our community step up and support those who are in need of it most." This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Memories of Christmas past in Acapulco. When growing up, every December my dad drove us to Acapulco for the winter holiday. It was great to leave Mexico City for those 2 weeks. We kids always had a lot of fun. Suffice it to say, Acapulco was not the tourist center it has become. As we used to joke, you could still drive in the city. The hotel we stayed up was called Hotel Papagayo, and it has not been there for a few decades. The rooms were small and cozy, and it sat on a large property where we kids could go get lost and even play with deer that lived on the property. After the morning at the beach across the Costera Miguel Alemán at Hornitos Beach. These days, it is a working-class beach. It had the softest and finest sand I have ever experienced, and the waves were quite small, therefore safe for children to play in the water. The palapas, none brought their own umbrellas, were rented out, and you could eat fish and coconut right on the beach. But it was a Christmas dinner that was different. Given we are Jewish, it was a different affair from the fun and games of Hanukkah, where it was far less formal. The hotel had an open-air eating hall, which was decked with lights and deer, not reindeer. Rudolph was missing, and the biggest Christmas tree you have ever seen. I was 7 or 8 at the time, so I suppose any tree would be huge. Yet this was a pine tree in an area of Mexico known as Tierra Caliente, hot land, where palm trees are common, as well as other tropical plants. This tree was probably brought from near Mexico City, where pine trees are common due to the elevation. There is one more important detail. There were no gifts under the tree. The music leading to the affair was a classic posada, and the meal itself was festive, with turkey and rice and vegetables. There was also dessert, usually yellow cake or flan. For those who wanted it, there was salted cod, Veracruzana style, which is a tomato-based sauce, hot peppers, and vegetables. We never ordered it out of fear that the fish was still salty. When it comes out of a barrel, the dried-out husk is covered in a thick crust of salt and fully dehydrated. There were also Mexican candies to share, some made out of coconuts, which are very common in Acapulco. others made out of tamarind paste with salt and chili. We kids loved them, and we always took some home when the holiday was over, and we went back to school on January 2nd. Why, you might ask, there were no presents under the tree. In Mexico, like many other countries, that was the first day of Advent that ended on January 6th, when the three wise men came to give the gifts at the manger to baby Jesus. Of course, we did not expect gifts of clothes, sometimes given for Christmas, or for that matter, toys for the wise men day. But in a way, those dinners, somewhat formal for a tropical area, are full of good memories. It was a time we did look forward to. In the spirit of the season, the Mexican wish is Feliz Navidad y Próspero Año Nuevo. Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. This is Nadine Abbott for KNSJ in Descanso and East County Magazine.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report from East County Magazine. On Wednesday, we told you about a brazen bulldozer theft caught on surveillance video in Lakeside. Today, we have some good news to report from our news partner, 10 News. 10 News aired film of the thieves rolling out the 18-ton dozer, moving aside boulders as they drove the vehicle over a riverbed and up into the back of a flatbed truck. After TV viewers saw the video, they solved the crime. Tipsters led sheriff's investigators to Tecate, where the semi-truck used in the heist was found. The stolen bulldozer was also recovered, although it had been stripped of parts and had some damage. Brian Crow, the owner of Bill Signs Trucking, where the vehicle was stolen from, said he received hundreds of leads. The crooks hot-wired the vehicle before making off with it, but thanks to alert citizens, the $300,000 bulldozer will be back with its rightful owner just in time for Christmas.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Anat Tor, award-winning author and illustrator of four children's picture books, I Dream of Puffy Clouds, Mama Says, Mama's Bag, and Mama's Shoe. In addition to writing, my guest sings and has been lead singer in a local jazz and blues band called Swingbuck. She's also just completed writing and singing 12 children's songs. Welcome, Annette. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with your latest picture book, I Dream of Puffy Clouds. I know that in this bedtime story, kids can be kids. They hop away on clouds, they eat ice cream puffs, and float off into outer space. It's a book of the imagination instead of technology. So what motivated you to write it, and how have kids responded?
Well, what motivated me to write is, I think, my fascination of clouds. I think daily when I look up in the sky and if I see a beautiful cloud, I kind of like to let my imagination go and say, oh, that kind of looks like an ice cream puff, or that kind of looks like cotton candy. Maybe I just like sweets. But part of it is when, you know, I have a still vivid memories of my childhood. And so I think I have a combination of how I used to think back then and now my six-year-old. So it happened at a time when he was flying away with his dad to visit his grandparents. And I promised that I would write him a book a day until he would see me. So I was supposed to meet up with him 30 days later, which was a long time.
30 books.
Yeah, so I said, okay, 30 days, I need at least 30 pages. Of course, it's not that long, but so I started drawing about the fascination with clouds. What could you do on a cloud when you're on a plane? You know, the clouds you see below, I've always used to imagine, where are the signs? How do the planes know where to navigate? Uh-huh. So all that part of the imagination brought onto the book, you know, to have signs on top of the clouds, and, you know, you could actually hop on a cloud and not fall through it. So it's a feel-good bedtime story with good dreams and waking up to a good reality.
So the playful side of you is very strong.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you lie there with your child, or have you looking at the clouds?
We do on a sunny day. You know, if I ever come across a beautiful cloud, I just want to stop and say, oh my goodness, look at that cloud. It's just beautiful. What does that look like? Sometimes they're massive.
Mm-hmm. Well, your book, The Rainbow Animals, that was your first multimedia production. It has a booklet, CD, audiobook, and DVD. What led you to go in that direction, and what was it like to do this? Would you recommend it for other children's authors?
Well, first of all, it was a lot of work. So
I bet.
The writing part of the book and the illustrating did take a long time. And then to actually write 12 songs to go along with each character.
Sure.
And then I animated it as well. And of course, I had my children sing in the CD. So putting all that time in together, not just myself, but my family, we put in a lot of hours into the actual production. So I definitely would recommend it to other authors if they would like to add that type of element to their books, because I think whenever you mix music and mm-hmm. art and a nice story, it gives a nice, overall nice package.
But you really taught it all to yourself, the program.
The program I taught all to myself. I spent many sleepless nights.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the motivation to work with something new is kind of, you know, a big factor of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love it. So it wasn't, I didn't feel like work. It just felt like I was having fun the whole time. So I didn't really even notice how much work went into it. But looking back, it was actually years.
Wow.
Years of work.
Motivation. Let's talk about your book, Mama's Shoe. I love the title. It won honorable mention at the New England Book Festival, and I understand that it's based on your experiences with your son. And I couldn't help but notice that 3 out of 4 of your books have Mama on the cover. So what is it about parenthood that motivates you so much, that makes it such a theme in your books?
Yes, that's true. I think it's because it's what I know best right now, because I'm a mom. And, you know, when you have little children, the cutest things come out of their mouths.
Yes.
And so Mama's Shoe, for instance, what inspired that is one day I was running late and I was looking for my shoe. And I said to my younger son at the time, who was about 2, 2.5, can you help Mama find her shoe? And as I was looking for my shoe, I was looking at what he was doing, and he just was, you know, distracted by whatever he came across.
Of course.
So as soon as he would find a toy, he would start playing with that toy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kept repeating, where's Mama's shoe? Is it under the bed? No, it's not under the bed. Is it in the closet? No, it's not in the closet. Is it in the toy chest? No, it's not in the toy chest. Where could Mama's shoe be? And then I said, hey, this sounds like a book.
That's a great story. Let's talk about your work as an illustrator. You illustrate your books as well. What's your process of doing that? Do you write your books first and then draw? Do you do it any other direction? Do you base your characters on how real people look or make it up? What's your process?
I think it's a combination. I don't have one set way. I think it changes, but overall, I think I do like to create a storyboard. So if mm-hmm. I know what I'm going to be writing about, I kind of take a piece of paper and divide mm-hmm. it up into little rectangles. And then I will say, okay, I want it to start like this. And then I'll do a little quick sketch. And I'll put, so if I have an idea, I like to put it down right away so mm-hmm. I don't forget it. And then I'll make a little storyboard, and then it could change. I alter it as I write along. Sometimes I'll illustrate before I write, and sometimes I'll write, and then I'll illustrate according to what I wrote. So it's a combination.
And you enjoy the illustrating?
I love the illustrating. I have to say I have gotten better at it. When I first started, I would have to redo, and I would say, okay, this doesn't look right. And sometimes I would show it to one of my kids, and they would say, that looks strange. And I'm like, what looks strange? Okay, that arm looks funny. So I would change the arm, mm-hmm. or I would change the facial expression. And yes, sometimes I do base it on people mm-hmm. I actually know, or just a little part of what they are, mm-hmm. like some part of character that comes out from mm-hmm. them, or some type of cute facial expression that I like. I'll say, okay, I want my character to have that expression.
Mm-hmm. And do you use paint, or you do the art on the computer?
So I use a combination of markers and pastels. Okay. I like very vibrant colors, mm-hmm. strong colors. So I started, when I did the Rainbow Animals, it was all pastels and oil pastel, so it got extremely messy. I think now I like to use a combination of dry pastels with special type of markers. And the combination together, I think, is the style that I most like.
Very colorful and beautiful. In addition to creating books, you've had an amazingly versatile career of teaching and modeling and singing and math. But I'm fascinated about the music, too. Tell us a little bit about your songs, what they're about, and actually, why don't you sing us a few bars?
Okay, I'll sing Ziggy Wiggy from the Rainbow Animals, and he is a three-toothed giraffe, and his character loves to laugh. He's 22 feet tall, he's not too shy at all. He wears his hair slicked back, he's got a brush for that. And all the rainbow animals love him.
Oh, that's great. So this song and 11 other songs is on a CD.
Yes.
Okay, great. So you're basically creating an entire world, not just a book.
Yes, I guess if you look at it that way, yes.
Your book, Mama Says, has an unusual premise about a three-year-old child's ambition for college. What prompted that book?
That was an actual conversation I had in the car with my kids. And at the time, the youngest was about 2.5, almost 3, and the other one was in kindergarten. And I guess what prompted this book was a conversation with my older son at the time. I asked him, you know, in the car, did you do your homework? No, I didn't. I don't want to do my homework. And so I said, well, you know, if you don't do your homework, then you won't do well in elementary school. And if you won't do well in elementary school, you won't do well in middle school, which means you won't do well in high school. And then you won't go to college. And I realized I was going a little bit off. You know, he was only 5.5 years
right.
old. And so then my younger one, who was almost 3, looked at me and said, what's college? And then I kind of said, oh, that's too funny. So I said, well, college is where you learn to be anything you want to be, like a doctor or a dentist. And he looked at me really seriously and he said, when I go to college, I want to learn to become a dragon.
Okay.
And so then I said, okay. And years later, of course, I looked back at that and I said, I think I could make that into a children's
sure.
story as well. You know, of course, add in a little more imagination and take that context of the conversation and just mm-hmm. expand on it.
Great story. One last question. What's next? What are you working on?
I'm actually presently working on another Mama's Bees.
Mama's Bees?
Another title, yes. They don't all have the title Mama's, but this one does. Basically, it's also based on a true story, and I'm going to exaggerate a little bit on the characters.
Looking forward to it. Well, that's all the time we have for now, but thank you so much for joining us. If you would like more information about Anat Tor, please visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Anat, A-N-A-T, dot Tor, T-O-U-R, dot 3. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Corey Clement, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.